You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
The world doesn't need another sports show. It needs an awesome sports show. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. Neil, the boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual with me in studio, my co-host, Naz Marchese. How are you this morning, Naz?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. A nice safe drive this morning. A little chilly this morning, but at least didn't take my life in my hands driving down the DVP this morning like a lot of Sundays in the last couple of months. So kind of sunny out there. Days are getting a little bit longer. Moods seem to be getting better, and we're all getting tired of winter. So hopefully we'll get some warm, sunny weather soon.
I hope so.
Anyways, what's coming on the show today? It's one of the most popular days of the year is coming up, which is, of course, squeezed between Valentine's Day and March break. I'm talking about Trade Deadline Day, Naz. I feel like they should almost turn that into a national holiday. The TSN and Sportsnet go overboard with their coverage, and it's become like an iconic day in the Canadian landscape. So that's around the corner. We're going to talk to Post Media national hockey writer Michael Trakos, who's going to bring us up to speed on what may happen on trade deadline day, and big controversy in the golf world this week. Matt Kuchar got himself embroiled in a controversy way back in November. He won a lot of money in a tournament down in Mexico. Some people feel he didn't properly compensate his caddy. And that story took a life of its own this week, and Matt Kuchar didn't have to, but he voluntarily, or at the urging of his sponsors, or some people giving him advice, ponied up some more money for his caddy. And certainly we're going to chat with Sean Clement. Sean, we haven't chatted with in a while. Sean's now the director of golf at the Royal Quebec Club, and we're going to chat with him about that. He may have some opinions about that controversy, and we want to know what's going on in the golf world as well. So we'll chat with Sean Clement in the back end of the hour. Naz, last night, not the greatest Toronto Maple Leaf performance. Managed to watch the game. It reminded me quite a bit of their game down in Florida a few weeks back. Leafs didn't have any zip last night, Naz. Very few opportunities, very few shots on goal. They just didn't bring it last night. And now, this morning, they do not find themselves in second place in their division anymore.
Yeah, they're 1 point behind the Bruins, but the Leafs have one game in hand. I understand. I didn't watch the game, but I understand they had 8 shots to the middle of the second period. Craziness.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, it's just, you know, they played well. They've been playing well lately. They had a good
great game against Vegas.
Yeah, they had a good 10-game stretch. The only game they lost in the last little while was against the Rangers. I think it was last Sunday, and they had the Bulgarian backstopper for the Rangers stood on his head and took a lot of rubber in that game to keep the Leafs at bay in that one. It's the reports out. Babcock was quoted after the game. Some of the players are quoted after the game. It's no big deal. It happens. Move on to the next one, get that one out of the system, and we got to get ready for a stretch drive. So we're going into St. Louis as one of the hottest teams in the league.
9 in a row they've won, St. Louis. They're in the playoff hunt today, two now.
And just to think, a little while ago we were talking about Pietrangelo coming to Toronto. So things can change pretty quickly in the NHL nowadays, and Leafs got a big week. Blues, Capitals, and the hated Habs. They seem to create a little bit of distance with respect to the Habs, but Washington's always a tough game. They're in the thick of it, and you look at the standings, and there are 10 teams. You know, forget about Tampa. They're clearly going to win the President's Trophy, the number one team in the league. They've separated themselves from everybody else. And then you've got a group of a whole bunch of teams, 8 to 10 by my count, that are between 73 and 76 points. So it's going to be a mad, mad scramble to the finish line. And, you know, as we said, you know, Leafs had a good stretch. As you said, Naz, the season goes in cycles. I'm not putting too much into last night's game, other than the fact that, you know, thankfully the Leafs don't have to meet the Coyotes in the playoffs unless it's the Stanley Cup Final. They can't seem to beat these guys.
They're at home too.
I think that's it for the Coyotes for this season for the Leafs. And thankfully, and their record against the Coyotes, they showed it on Hockey Night in Canada last night. I think they've lost 15 of the last 19 games to the Phoenix / Arizona Coyotes.
And Montreal slipped a bit too, and they may be out of a playoff spot.
Well, like, you know, I said, Naz, there's we're into the as they would say in baseball, the dog days. These are the dog days of February or March, where things get tight, things get tough, you know, you cannot afford any missteps at this time of year, and especially the way the standings look. When you pick up the paper and you look at the standings now, there's not a lot of margin for error. Now, thankfully, the Leafs are in a pretty good spot, but they can't, you know, they can't let it up though. You know, and on that pedal, the arrow better be pointing forward, and you can't have it turn around and look the other way. There's just, in today's NHL, there's no margin for error. And, you know, it looks like, you know, the scenario looks like right now, Toronto, Boston. I don't see, you know, a few weeks back, Montreal was in the thick of it. A little further back, Buffalo was in the thick of it. But, you know, as they say, the cream rises to the top. And it looks like the Toronto-Boston first round matchup, they look like they're pointed at each other.
Wally, there was a rumor during the week that Hitchcock was going to step down as coach of the Oilers.
Oilers got there.
They've gone in reverse. That franchise is
Keith Gretzky running it now. I think he's a temporary GM till the end of the season. At least that's the way it's been reported.
How can you have the best player in hockey and be one of the worst teams? How does that happen?
You got to try. I mean, you know, I don't want to beat up on Peter Chiarelli this morning, but, you know, you could beat up on him, you know, not only in... my iPhone's doing strange things on me this morning, Naz. Turn it off. Let me see what I can do here. I'm hearing it in my... just talking about Peter Chiarelli, and you know, he made some interesting moves in Boston that I thought were a bit off the mark, and in the Taylor Hall move that I thought was a crazy move in Edmonton, getting rid of Taylor Hall for Adam Larson. You gave up the MVP in the league. I don't know how you could not have built a team around Taylor Hall and Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl, but goaltending and defense has never happened. They've never solved that issue in Edmonton, and they got salary cap problems, and they're butting up against the cap. So
they may be getting the first pick in the draft again this summer.
Well, it's quite possible. So I said we weren't going to beat up on Peter Chiarelli. I guess there's no other way of addressing that problem. It was not entirely of his making. He inherited a certain amount of it. But, you know, how many number one draft picks have they had there? Number one overall. What happened? Neil Yakupov, I don't even know where he is these
days. In the KKM in
Taylor Hall's in New Jersey. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
He's with Edmonton.
He's with Edmonton. He's a good player, but, you know.
Jordan Eberle's with the Islanders.
Yeah, but how they managed not to put a team together, that team should have been consistently one of the best teams. And 2 years ago, they had a run. And, you know, they made the playoffs, and they had a nice little run.
They were to go to the finals of the Stanley Cup.
And what happened? What happened?
Shouldn't it be interesting what Michael Tragos has to say about that?
Let's certainly ask him that question, and we'll see what his thoughts on that. You know, Edmonton's gone one way. Calgary's gone the other way. Leafs, interesting, before we go to break, what they may have in mind for the trade deadline. Does Kyle Dubas stay pat?
I think he stays pat. I really do. I don't think they're going to add any. If they add something, they're going to add depth forwards, like fourth liners or something.
Well, you can't, you know, I don't see any scenario where they substantially change, the key cogs of the team. Whoever's going to be brought in is going to be a fill-in piece, like you say, Naz. The conventional wisdom is some grit somewhere. Not so sure you're going to find anybody else on defense. I'm not sure you. It's always nice to have more defensemen. I don't know what's available and what you'd have to give up. My gut instinct tells me Dubas is not willing to give up anything other than he's not giving up another first rounder somewhere down the line. Maybe a prospect here or two, or a third or a fourth or a fifth or something like that. And then the proverbial sandpaper and grit up front, and you got to squeeze that in somewhere in your lineup, presumably on your third or fourth line. I can't see them doing anything other than that.
I think they stay pat. And you know what? They could win the Cup without being a classified heavy team. They could win. Montreal Canadiens back in the 70s weren't a heavy team.
No, but yeah, okay, Naz, but they had some guys.
Exactly.
You know what? When you're going over the blue line, Larry Robinson, and Lambert and Mario Tremblay, they weren't dirty players or tough players, but they were gritty in the sense that they had a nose for the puck. They wouldn't back off. They'd make their physical presence known, not necessarily with their fists, because that's not the way the game is played. But they need, there's so many cliches in hockey, so let's use a couple of them.
But they were classified as a fire wagon team.
Well, of course they were, because they had Lafleur and Shutt and Lemaire, but they also had the guys that were protecting those guys, because you had to in those days. Because, you know, when one of the big series of the 1970s, and just to digress here just a little bit, the most influential hockey series of the 1970s was when Montreal beat the Philadelphia Flyers in the Stanley Cup Final, 1976. The Flyers had beat the crap out of everybody for a couple of years and won the Stanley Cup, had beaten the Bruins, had beaten the Sabres. The infamous New Year's Day game, their going-home game against the Flyers. And it was a battle of styles between the Habs and the Flyers. And the Flyers were just, you remember those series they used to have against the Leafs? They were physical assaults more than anything else. And the Habs beat the Flyers, I think, four straight that year in the Stanley Cup Final. Reggie Leach won the Conn Smythe that year. And it was a changing of the guard that, you know, it was talent now. It was the Lafleurs and the Shutts and the Lemaires and the Mondus and those guys. Those guys couldn't have done it without the Larry Robinsons and the Pierre Bouchards and the tough guys. And the most significant play of that series, sorry, Naz, I'm going back in time here. I'm sure you remember it well. When Larry Robinson took Gary Dornhofer out on the boards, and they had to bring the repairman out to nail the boards back into place. That just changed. To me, that changed hockey. That particular play changed the nature and turned hockey back into a skill game. Not that the Flyers didn't have skill players. They did. But they beat the crap out. They won by beating the crap out of play.
Interesting, going back to that. Did you know that Dick Duff was traded for Larry Robinson?
In the draft choice.
Yeah, draft choice.
It became Larry Robinson.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Larry Robinson, Kitchener Rangers, if I'm not mistaken. Tough guy. They had some other tough guys on defense, and it was in those days the tough guys protected the skill guys. And game's a little bit different, but we got to go. We got Michael Tracos from the National Hockey Writer from Post Media. We got to talk to him about trade deadline day.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we received this letter. My marriage is in a rut. Can you help us spice things up? Yes. Get the gourmet special. Two medium gourmet pizzas for just $24.99. He loves Canadian bacon, so he'll order a deluxe. She can order the Italian because she loves the hot Italian sausage. Everyone's happy.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
There's an old saying. Entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
Steel's Paint in Woodbridge, an enormous 20,000 square foot superstore that carries nothing but the best. Superior staff, superior advice, superior selection, superior everything. When you have a really tough job to do, they can knock it down to size. They'll show you how to get it done right, and because they only sell the best of everything, you'll get it done to last. That means superior satisfaction. Steel's Paint, 4190 Steel's Avenue West in Woodbridge, the best.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto on the new AM 740. Downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, live video streaming, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour national hockey writer for Post Media, Michael Tracos. Good morning, Michael. How are you this morning?
Hey, pretty good, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing good. We're getting excited. Naz and I are exchanged. We've managed to convince Shoppers Drug Mart and Hallmark they should put out national trade deadline cards. So so Naz and I are going to be exchanging trade deadline cards and gifts. So all kidding aside, it's trade deadline day. I know you're in the thick of the action, Michael, and there's a couple of key names out there. First of all, we'll talk about some of the key names, and we bring it always back to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Matt Duchene, Mark Stone, where are they going?
Not going to Toronto.
We can't afford them.
No, and I don't think you need them. And I think the Toronto Maple Leafs have already done their shopping.
Do you see an active trade market at the trade deadline day this year, Michael? Sometimes we get all excited. Shape it, analyze it for us.
Yeah, I think it's going to be active. In regards to the Leafs, I don't think it's going to be totally active. It might be sort of a fringe move where they either get a depth center for the fourth line, something like that, or they get another defenseman just to, barring injury or whatever. And I think they got just another body back there because I think that's the last thing you want. They're covering a series with the Sabres or a playoff line with the Sabres in 05-06 where that team was headed to the Stanley Cup final, but over the course of three rounds, they lost like a defenseman almost every week, where they were just decimated by the end of it. And I think that's in the back of every GM's mind is that I mean, you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think they've lost the fewest games, man games, to injury of any team in the NHL. So I think they're going to get some depth, but I don't think they're going to be in the market for either a Duchesne, a Stone, a Panarin, or even a Wayne Simmonds or Michael Ferland, to be honest. But in terms of the active market, yeah, I think there's a lot of teams like Pittsburgh, Boston, Nashville are going to be in on those names that is mentioned that you're talking about as well. There's a lot of players out there that are headed to UFA, unrestricted free agency. So a lot of rental names that typically wouldn't be available, I think, in any other market. And it's going to be interesting to see how teams improve their rosters, on at least on paper, after that deadline. I think one of the things that Toronto Maple Leafs did that was so smart was that they got Jake Muzzin in well before the deadline. So you know, by February 25th, this guy will have played, I don't know, maybe like 8 games or so, maybe almost 10 games. And, you know, whether he's on the left side or the right side, I think there's going to be a comfort there. Whereas a lot of these guys who come in on February 25th, you know, it might take them a couple of months maybe even to get acclimated. So we'll see how it turns out, but I don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to be worried about keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak.
Michael, who's going to be the most active team at trade deadline, do you think?
I got my money on Nashville. And just because David Poile is one of those guys that loves to swing for the fences at this time of year, it seems like. And you look at that team, and goaltending-wise, there might not be a team that's got better set of two goaltenders. Defense, you know, what can you say about a team that's got Subban, Yossi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis? Like, there's no holes back there. Where there is some quality or some concern is that they don't have the horses up front. Like after Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, and Victor Arvidsson, I think there's a talent drop off. I don't think Cal Turris has been the player that they expected him to be. And I don't think they're getting that secondary punch that they need. Really, that secondary punch has been coming from the back end. So I imagine that they're going to get, you know, one of either Duchesne, Stone, Panarin, whoever. They're going to get maybe even two players up front. And so that, in my mind, I'm talking about the West. It's, you know, it comes down to, I think, Winnipeg, Nashville, and San Jose. And right now, I think Nashville needs to beef up their offense, their forwards, before they can kind of be considered a Stanley Cup contender.
Michael, what happens with the Oilers? What are they going to do?
What can they do? Like they traded Cam Talbot, and I think that was the one piece that they had. And I think, you know, all eyes, I guess, are going to be on Jesse Puljujärvi, the kid that they drafted, what was it, fourth overall, the same year that the Leafs got Matthews and Winnipeg got Laine, and he hasn't worked out. But at the same time, you know, I just wrote about Dylan Strome earlier in the week. And, you know, that's a danger. You trade Dylan Strome, Arizona does, because he's just not working out and they're getting patient. And you see him, he's lighting it up now with the Blackhawks. He's basically a point-per-game guy ever since he got to Chicago. And, you know, Edmonton, I think, is probably considering the same thing now with Puljujärvi, where he's just not working out. But you trade him now, you're not going to get value for him. And you run the risk of, you know, if he sends to Carolina, so and that's one of the rumored destinations. Well, he's got a history of playing with Sebastian Aho. This guy could light it up as soon as he gets there. All of a sudden, he's in a top six role, and he doesn't have that pressure that he might have had in Edmonton. And there's another trade that's kind of blown up in your face. But other than that, like, what do you do if you're Edmonton? You can't trade Milan Lucic. No one's taking that anchor of a contract. The guys in the back end aren't getting moved like Chris Russell. You're really set there with the Oilers, where you've made your bed. Now you got to sleep in it until those guys either come off the books or you're allowed to buy them out of the contracts. But, yeah, I don't envy the position that Keith Gretzky and Bob Nicholson are in right now, because it's almost kind of like a waiting pattern. You've got the guys. It's just a matter of, you know, be patient and how you're patient in that kind of market.
Interesting about this year, and I want to get your take on it as well, Michael, is there seems to be, you know, doesn't seem to be that many teams that are completely at this point in time out of a playoff run. Some of them have come on. Carolina's come on.
St. Louis
has come. I mean, we were on the show. Naz and I were just talking about this earlier. The rumor, what was it, about a month and a half ago, that we were they were going to be moving Pietrangelo to the Leafs?
You guys, I think, were questioning me, or maybe someone else was on the radio, I remember. Hey, should the Leafs go after Pietrangelo? Yeah. There's a chance that Parayko could come to this team, and I'm thinking, okay, 6 weeks later,
<They're>,
this team is the third best team in the Central.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a run. It's a run to the finish line this year. I mean, I pick up the paper and there's 10 teams or 8 to 10 teams that have between 73 and 76 points, like obviously spread throughout the whole league. And then you've got other teams like Carolina and St. Louis coming on, and you got Columbus, who, you know, they're talking about moving out Panarin and Bobrovsky, but they're not out of it. So how does a general manager make that decision? Is your sense there's something different this year?
It's going to be real tough, because how do you tell your owner, like you said, that you're out of it, that you're going to be a seller, that you're going to be discarding players that are going to get you into the playoffs for the good of the long term, when that player, that owner, saying, yeah, but two home playoff dates, man. I got some money in the bank. How do you do that? And you're right. Any other year, a lot of those teams, like in Edmonton, the Chicago, even Anaheim, like they fire Randy Carlyle, and at the time, I think they're only like 5 or 6 points out of a playoff spot, and that team has lost like something like 22 of 28 games or something.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah, as of today, the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't in the playoffs.
Yeah.
How can you think Sidney Crosby not being in the playoffs?
Well, how would you like to be Steven Stamkos and you win the President's Trophy as the best team in the NHL? And, oh, yeah, here you go, first-round matchup. Pittsburgh Penguins, you just sneak into the playoffs.
I'd rather be where the Leafs are, really.
I know. Like, we're talking, a lot of people kind of, you know, like, wring their hands over the fact that Toronto might have to play Boston again, but you really want to be Tampa and potentially facing the Penguins in the first round. Like, that's not an enviable matchup as well. So, or even like the Islanders, potentially they could face them after winning the division. There's a team that no one would have expected to be in the playoff spot, never mind a division leader. So, the standings are kind of kooky this year. And over in the West, it's been a snail's race where no one seems to want to win it. We'll see if there's any kind of sort of separation in the next week. I doubt it. I think that's going to be the challenge. Like, I was talking to a couple of GMs earlier this week, and that was the main concern. They said, we still don't know for a seller. You know, I don't think we're going to be buyers because, you know, let's face it, if you get into the playoffs, it's going to be as the eighth or the seventh seed. And, you know, I can't be a buyer if I'm only a seventh or eighth seed, but there's no way I'm selling my rental players that I thought I'd be selling at this point of year. So there might be a fewer names available, but you know, if I'm the Columbus Blue Jackets, I'm selling. I don't know about you guys, but whether they're a playoff team or not, that's not a Stanley Cup team. And you know, you're not going to hang on to Panarin just for the sake of, okay, we're a playoff team. I think that's a piece that you can get. Forget about just the first round pick. You're getting the first round pick easily for him, but you're also getting a top-end prospect and quite possibly like two decent roster players. Like, that's a package I don't think the Yarmo Kekäläinen and the GM there can pass up. So I'm real intrigued to see if they've got the kind of chutzpah to kind of actually go through with it and make that hard decision of trading either him or Bobrovsky. It will be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if Columbus would make a trade and then try to land Duchesne or Stone in the same breath. That would be an interesting move.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And that's the thing. What I'm hearing is Columbus, if they do trade Panarin, it could be to a non-playoff team. Like, it could be to the Rangers or the LA Kings. And if that's the case, maybe it's just one of those kind of hockey deals and both teams sort of get better and maybe the Islanders aren't going to be any worse for wear if they get a couple of roster players along with it. But one of the deals I've heard is for the Islanders, actually. And, you know, if they can get a guy like Anthony Beauvillier to go along with maybe a first-round pick and one of their top prospects, and that's a team that he's drafted real well in the last couple of years, That could be a real good trade that Columbus just can't turn down.
We're talking to Michael Tracos. Michael, I know you spend a lot of time in press boxes and that type of area, so you get a sense of who's coming to the games and which other scouts and which other GMs are floating around. And there was this talk a few weeks back of the Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes were doing a tango dance with each other. So, you know, a lot of the Hurricanes staff or management was seen at Leaf games and vice versa. That seems to sort of died down, and the guy that was in the people were talking about was this Michael Furland. Is that conversation dead, or is you still seeing some of that activity?
Well, it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. I think that with Carolina surging up the standings, I think all bets are off in terms of who they might be or would have been standing to the Leafs or any other team. At one point, I heard names like Dougie Hamilton and either Brett Pesce as well in terms of a defenseman possibly going to Toronto or somewhere else. And like I said, it's tougher to make that deal. I know Tom Dundon, their owner, has been very vocal in the sense that he wants to be in the playoffs, and he doesn't think it's acceptable that this team has missed so many years. And you know, I think there's a lot of Vegas effect going around the NHL where owners look at what the Golden Knights were able to do with sort of a bare bones roster, so to speak, and now they're saying to their GM, well, you know what, we've had this team together for X number of years, well, why is Vegas able to turn it around and get something going right off the start where we can't? So I don't expect, as long as Carolina is in the mix, that Furlan would be available or any of their defensemen would be available. I know they've been scouting the heck out of Toronto in other games, but I have a feeling those kind of talks have died down of late.
Looks like Lou Lamoriello has brought New Jersey Devils hockey back to the Islanders. They play such a great defensive game, and they're number one in the league. That's very surprising.
Or Barry Trotz.
Yeah, Barry Trotz, yeah. Very surprising. Yeah. What a turnaround that is.
I don't get it, guys. hey, how do you lose John Tavares and get better? I think it really is insane. And, you know, all the credit to Barry Trotz, all the credit to Lou Lamoriello, who, you know, him, he's always a big believer of the logo on the front is a lot more important than the name on the back. And, you know, it's sort of coming true this year. Obviously, the goaltending tandem of Greiss and Robin Lehner has been the story of the year for them. And, you know, those guys are probably going to combine for the William Jennings Award as, I think, the lowest goals against average in the league. Last time I checked, they were right around there. But it's, it's one of those ones that you can't really put your finger on. Like, no, they don't have a single guy, I think, in the top 50 in scoring, and yet they've got, like, something like 13 or 14 guys who've scored at least 10 goals or more. So it is a total team effort that's happening down there. It's not just the top line. It's not just the second line. It's all four lines that are going. And, you know, all the credit, like I said, to Barry Trotz. And then I have all the time in the world for Lou Lamoriello. The guy's just a class act and a true gentleman and one of those guys that just knows how to build a hockey team the right way.
We're talking to Michael Tracos. Michael, we won't keep you much longer, but the conversation since the Matthews signing is, I wouldn't say that it's heating up because the Marner camp is sort of putting a kibosh on discussing it now. They've said they won't talk about it till after the season, or that deal's not going to get done. But have you formulated in your mind, Michael? Obviously, Marner will be signed come hell or high water. What's the number going to be? What's the number going to be in the term? Let's take a bet.
Yeah, it's going to be somewhere close to what Tavares is making. I don't think he's going to be making exactly what Matthews is getting, but it's not going to be that far off. If anyone thinks that the gap is going to be more than $1 million or so, they're crazy. This guy's Marner and incredible. And I think it's going to be 5 years. I think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be 5 years. The word I'm hearing, and this is just from a couple sources, is that that's where it's going to differentiate, where you're going to go a little longer term, and because you're going longer term, he's going to take maybe a little bit more money, but the percentage, I think, is going to be a little different, a little less than what Matthews is getting. And that's the thing to think about. we all get caught up in just actual dollars, how many million he's making per year. The agents these days, and especially with Mariners camp, and this is very true of Matthews and also of McDavid, they're talking about percentage. What's the percentage of the cap that these guys are getting? And that percentage is going to be real close to what Matthews is getting, but I think it's going to be a little less. And whether it's 5, 6, 7, 8 years, don't worry about the dollars. Look at the percentage. And ultimately, I think that's where it's going to come down to. But, you know, if this guy's a top five scorer by the end of the year and or even in the top 10, it's going to be hard not to pay him what he's definitely worth. And this guy's worth as much as Matthews in my mind.
Well, we wish Kyle Dubas and all his number crunchers all the best. I hope they've invested.
The calculators.
I hope they've invested in the latest high technology computers and calculators, because it's going to take some significant mathematical expertise to make those numbers work. So we'll let them figure that one out. Michael, you know, it's always a pleasure. You know, we always appreciate your time, and I always want to remind our listeners that not only do you write for the Post Media, and we can find you in the Toronto Sun and the Toronto and the Financial Post. You're also an author, and you've got a great new book out, The Next Ones: How McDavid, Matthews, and a Group of Young Guns Took Over the NHL. It's a great topic. It reflects the NHL from today, and to all our listeners, we highly recommend. Check out Michael Trakos, author of The Next Ones. Michael, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, guys, and thanks for plugging the book. And, yeah, for any Toronto Maple Leafs fan, there's a significant chapter on Nylander, Matthews, and Marner in there. So tells you how exactly they got from point A to point B, and it's each one's path is significantly different. So.
Anyways, Michael, enjoy Canada's next national holiday, National Trade Line Deadline Day. Trading Deadline Day.
I'm going to have to get my card from Homer.
Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. That, of course, is Michael Trakos. Naz, any thoughts on Leafs? Final thoughts on Leafs on National Trade Deadline Day? I think
he agreed
Michael.
I think
Michael got it. He sort of echoed what you said earlier, which was we don't see the Leafs doing much.
Fringe players, they can add.
Anyways, it's time to go to break. After the break, we'll be back with Sean Clement, and we'll be talking golf and a little bit about Matt Kuchar, I would suspect. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when I realised that, unlike pizza, you can enjoy Pizzaville's authentic Panzerotti with just one hand. Pizzaville and its entities, owned in whole or in part, have no interest in knowing what you do with your other hand while you're consuming one of our Panzerotti. Seriously. Get two authentic Italian Panzerotti with cheese and sauce for just $10.49. One for each hand.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
At Titanium Logistics, we believe that choosing the right shipping company comes down to two issues: price and cost. Most prices are competitive. We'll likely save you money too. But the cost of choosing the wrong company to service your cross-border freight to and from the U.S. and Mexico can be extraordinary. If it's not where it should be, when it should be, that bargain price, worthless. Titanium Logistics. On time, on budget. Call 905-266-3014. Ask for Blair Downey.
At 20,000 square feet, Steeles Paint in Woodbridge is Canada's largest independent paint store. Big deal, right? Big deal, yes. The best brands, the best staff, the best advice, the best of everything. From color matching to brand selection, whether you're a pro or a DIYer, we'll look after you from the minute you walk in to the minute you walk in a second time as a completely satisfied customer. Big store, big deal, bigger satisfaction. Simple. Steeles Paint, 4190 Steeles Avenue West in Woodbridge.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity and Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
There are two ways to argue sports with these guys, and none of them work. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. It's time to change tack here, Naz. We're going to get off the ice and talk about some green, the green of golf, and who could be better to talk to about that than our good friend, Sean Clement. How are you, Sean?
Hey, boys, how you doing?
We're doing good. You're now the director of golf at the Royal Quebec, and is it any warmer there than it is in Toronto, Sean?
Oh, I wouldn't know. I just we just got about 80 centimeters of snow this week, so we got some good insulation.
So you guys are doing well, Sean. It's always a pleasure to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us, and we wanted to wade into a controversy that happened, and we wanted to get your thoughts on it. A controversy that happened on the PGA Tour this week. The event actually happened back in November, and I'm talking about Matt Kuchar, who won a tournament back in November in Mexico.
That's it. You know, 1.2 about 4 years.
Yeah, well, I think he $1.3 million or thereabouts. Didn't bring his regular caddy to that tournament. Hired somebody local, and then. Apparently he had agreed upon a fee and settled it, and then later on the caddy wasn't too happy about it, felt he should have been paid more, and that got Kuchar embroiled in a controversy that he finally backed down on this week, probably because his sponsors probably said fix this and fix it soon. And settled with the caddy for $50,000. Naz and I had a discussion on this, and I'd like
off air.
Naz, I'm probably in a significant minority. I understand where the majority thinks about this particular issue, and most of the majority is backing the caddy's stance on it. I'm not completely backing Kuchar, but I'm not backing the caddy either. I think it was mismanaged from both sides. But Sean, did Kuchar do the right thing by settling at a higher figure, and did he do the wrong thing by how he handled it originally?
Well, I mean, it's you know, you go about your daily business, and I think it's just a wake up call for Matt. To be a little more caring about the people around him. You know, you're talking about he's in the top percentile as far as money earners, and you're talking about a caddy in Mexico. So, number one, I think that he had a lot of value to bring to the table because he's a local caddy and knows the golf course intimately, and that was to me an advantage. Matt Kuchar. Number one, he didn't recognize that, and he basically treated him like any other, a backup caddy that would be in a local situation. But you know, the fact that he won because of that, and everybody knows that caddies make it, it's you can see it everywhere. They make 10% of the earnings when the PGA Tour player wins. Obviously, it's not the regular caddy. You don't expect to make that much, but you would expect to get a little bit more of a pat on the back than, here's what we agreed upon, thanks very much, see ya. And because of social media, this was exposed. It would have been nice to see Matt right away realize it, but then instead of, being defensive about it, and then realizing it afterwards, I think he probably got heckled quite a bit in L.A. this week, and then has made his repairs on the situation. I think I really appreciated the in-depth apology that he gave this week, and I think he'll do okay from now on.
Sean, how important is the caddy to a success of a golfer?
It's massive. You should see the homework these guys do. I mean a regular caddy is going to go out and roll the ball from 8 different positions around every possible pin position so that, you don't get fooled by what you see. So there's a lot of local knowledge that you really have to do some incredible homework on. So, I mean, he has to have an intimate knowledge of the golf course and pass on that information to the player. I mean, every relationship of caddy player is different, but there are some very high responsibilities for a caddy.
Talking about and what hasn't come out, what hasn't come out in the story, and you've in terms of done a good job of explaining the importance of a caddy and somebody's regular tour caddy. What hasn't come out in the story is exactly what this particular caddy would have done to assist Kuchar in winning this tournament. Would it be your sense that without if it had, let's assume I had been carrying Matt's bag,
right,
would Matt have still won this tournament?
No.
Okay, tell me why.
I'll give you an example. I mean, if any of the golfers listening right now have ever been to a place like Pinehurst, where you have some local caddies that are going to, you know, carry your bag for you, and so you can really enjoy the golf course, and they're going to tell you off the tee, listen, you need to beat down this side of the fairway so you can attack that pin. If you're not there, you're going to have trouble with that pin. And then you get to the greens and you say, I know you think this is going to break to the right, but it doesn't. It won't move. Putt it straight. Trust me. I've seen this 1,000 times. And that's what, you know, this caddy goes out twice a day with groups on his golf course. I tell you, he knows every single grass strand on that golf course. And that, to me, is that's why a lot of the guys on the PGA Tour for a long time, when they went to Augusta National, they used a local caddy because they needed that knowledge of the greens. So yeah, that there's no way that had he used anybody else who didn't know the golf course, I don't think he would have won.
Now, what has been reported is that the caddy and Matt had agreed upon the compensation before they started, and that Matt initially had paid him a little bit more, which I found should have paid him a lot more. But they had agreed upon the compensation. And then later on, they had made an offer of about $20,000, which the caddy turned down. Is this all about Matt taking advantage of a position where there's unequal bargaining power? The fact that they had made a deal is not relevant, is it? Is it just about the unequal bargaining power?
Well, I mean, you know, like Matt says, I mean, the caddy makes about $200 a day on a good day where he is. And somebody comes in on the PGA Tour, and you have the opportunity to caddy for a guy on the PGA Tour for $3,000. So you're making more money. That's the offer you get. It's either that or nothing. So obviously he's not going to say no. And then, okay, so you make $3,000 for the week and make or break the cut. You make an extra grand for the weekend, and then a top 10, you make an extra $1,000. To me, you know, that was the caddy being in a position where, I'll take it because this is better than what I would do this week. And besides, because the tournament's here this week, I can't caddy for anybody, so I will take the position. And to me, Matt had a golden opportunity to go, wow, man, I had a chance to change the life of this kid or this caddy and his family and make things better for him and to make a real difference and for helping me. And like to me, I know that many other caddies or many other players would have handled it differently. And I'm disappointed that the caddy just had $5,000 in his pocket at the end of the week after a $1.3 million win, you know? Especially he hadn't won in 4 years. I mean, he should have celebrated that sucker in a huge way.
Do you think the caddy was aware of the compensation for other caddies in the PGA on the PGA Tour?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, with today's day and age, the internet, everybody's got a phone and has access to all this information now. I mean, and there's a lot of people that are going to be whispering in his ear. I can't believe he didn't give you more than that and all, you know, and then And I think everybody had a chance to think about it on both sides. And I would feel cheated. You know, here's the American PGA Tour coming in, and they make all that money, and they leave, and they leave you with, okay, I made a little bit better than what I did, but compared to, it just doesn't seem adequate.
I'll give Kuchar the credit for this. He finally, either he came to it on his own, or my guess is some of his advisors and perhaps some of his sponsors.
Ultimately, it's Matt Kuchar's decision to do that, and I applaud him for it. I mean, I read the apology, and it wasn't like, okay, I'm sorry, here's your $50,000.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I really apologize to everybody for being an ass. And I was wrong, and I profoundly understand what I did, and it was wrong. And then here's the retribution that everyone thinks is fair, and I think it's fair too. So here you go, no hesitation. There's the $50,000, and to me that was just terrific.
It was good to see that. Sean, we've got just a few minutes left, and I want to take the opportunity to catching up with you. Tell us what's happening in the Sean Clement golf world these days. Bring us up to speed.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we just opened up our indoor academy at the Royal Quebec Golf Club, and the response is much higher than anticipated. It's exceeding my expectations. I'm actually every bit as busy here than I was in Toronto, believe it or not. It's phenomenal. I'm seeing over 60 people a week right now in the academy, and because it's so well equipped, and I've got my GC quad from Foresight, you basically don't need a range anymore with the quality of information that you get out of that simulator. And I got people coming in from all over Canada and the U.S. in the winter to come and see me for some golf instruction, which is phenomenal. And, you know, Quebec City is such a bucket list place to be right now. It's the carnival here, and it's the place is on fire, and the snow conditions are out of this world. I've never seen so much snow in my life. The ski conditions are ridiculous. So we've been enjoying this winter wonderland quite a bit.
And Sean, you're still working up a storm in the golf instructional world on your site, wisdomingolf.com. I encourage all the listeners, if you want to improve your game, wisdomingolf.com, and some of the best material on the internet on your YouTube channel, Sean Clement. So tell us what's going on your website and on YouTube.
Yeah, during the golf show, we met up again with the gang. Last year we had a huge spread we did with Golfing World, which is an IMG company out of the UK. And I actually was on the Golf Channel on their program every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. And you'll see some more of that. Because we just did a whole slew of videos and lessons at the Duran Golf Club in Florida while we were down there at the PGA show. And I already have a few people from Vietnam who said, hey, Sean, I saw you out here. I mean, the world is so small now. It's unbelievable. These are my students online from Vietnam, which is really hopping right now. There's like 80 golf courses being built on the Vietnam coastline, and because of the situation in China where the government has actually shut down a few golf courses, they're taking their money and bringing it to Vietnam, and all of the top American architects are making out like bandits in that neck of the woods, and it was pretty cool that I was on the Golf Channel over there because of Golfing World.
Anyways, we've been talking to Sean. Sean, you know the way this show works. We run out of time. You've been in studio with us a few times. You know how quickly the time goes by here. We're going to have to let you go. We're going to thank you for helping us out this morning. Appreciate your thoughts on the Matt Kuchar controversy. I think you've pulled me over to your side.
Sean, 70 centimeters. That means golf season will open in July in Quebec City, right?
Well, early May is usually the season.
That's when it happens. Anyway, Sean, we're going to have to let you go. Listen, keep well, and I hope to see you soon.
Nice talking to you guys. All the best.
Always a pleasure. Sean Clement.
70 centimeters of snow. Holy cow.
Oh, well,
we think we have it bad.
20 seconds left, Naz. I usually give you the last sporting word. I'll turn it over to you.
Big week coming up for the Leafs. Let's see what they can do and get higher in the standings if they can.
Go Leafs, go. We'll be back again next Sunday morning. To our listeners, have a fantastic and safe week.